Chapter 27. Wednesday. Rawton. The decidedly unsporty Griffin Sportina, like all cars built in the Welsh Socialist Republic, had a projected design life of a century, or 5 million miles. With a chassis designed for a dump truck, and with a body of heavy-gauge steel, the car was almost indestructible. And hard to drive. Newcomers to Sportina driving were excused for thinking the steering lock was on when it wasn't, and an hour of clutch and gear shift selection exceeded the Surgeon General's minimum daily exercise recommendations for a week. Ewan Lloyd, Griffin Motors, Cars for Eternity.
"So, why are we heading up here?" asked Friday, as we drove up and out of the Rawton village and toward the disused airfield.
"Goliath has a company named Smote Solutions, and I don't like the sound of it. We'll have a quick look, and then do your thing over at the Time Park. Is there something wrong with the gearbox? It's making a lot of noise."
"It has to," he said, "or you'd be annoyed by the incessant whirring coming out of the back axle."
Friday drove a Welsh-built 1967 Griffin Sportina. He loved it, despite its many strange idiosyncrasies, such as a better drag coefficient when in rain, and the Pencoid V8 engine that could run on anything from high-quality aviation spirit to powdered anthracite. Although the car had done over 500,000 miles, it was considered only just broken in. We topped the hill and came within sight of the deserted airfield. I sank lower in my seat.
"Drive past the gates, slowly the first time."
Friday did as I asked, and I stared out the window in a bored fashion, so as not to attract attention. The front entrance of the disused airfield, usually just chained and padlocked, was being guarded by two Goliath security personnel. I tried to make out what was happening on the airfield itself, but the land rose ahead of the runway, and it was difficult to see anything.
"Turn around and go past again," I said.
"I prefer to find a roundabout," he murmured. "Only bodybuilders and ex-tank drivers attempt three-point turns in a Griffin."
"Tank drivers? Then let me try, you great big soft baby, you."
"You drove armoured personnel carriers," said Friday, smiling. "Hardly the same thing."
"It had tracks and a V12, I said, "so do as you're told, or I'll stop doing your washing."
"Okay, turning around."
He didn't need to do a three-point turn, as it turned out, because a gate was open to a field, and he drove in and began to turn the Sportina around in a large arc.
"Isn't that..."
I said, pointing to a car hidden from the road inside a clump of birch saplings.
"Yes, it is," said Friday. "Uncle Miles."
We parked the Sportina next to Miles's car and climbed out. Initially, he seemed surprised to see us, but soon he realized that if there was any Goliath mischief kicking around, then I'd doubtless be involved somewhere. Miles Hawke had worked in Spec Ops Tactical Support after a brief career in professional croquet. His mid-air roquet in the 1984 Superhoop was the high point of his career, as he succumbed to a knee injury soon after. He and my brother Joffy hooked up in 1986 and were married 2 years later. He had resigned from SO14 soon after to help Joffy raise the Church of the Global Standard Deity from an obscure religious group to the world-dominating force it was today. Of course, this didn't mean that Miles was involved in the day-to-day running of GSD. He wasn't. He was simply support for Joffy, and looked after his partner's spiritual and emotional well-being. And on occasions like this, it seemed, he also did a bit of hands-on surveillance. SO14 training can be useful. We greeted Miles, and after exchanging pleasantries and the almost mandatory short conversation about the weather, I asked him how Smote Solutions intended to lure the smiting from Swindon. He pointed at a camera attached to a tree branch high above us.
"I have an eye in the sky," he said. "Take a look."
He was holding a miniature flat-screen TV in his hand, and the camera above gave us a good view of the airfield. A good but unremarkable view of the airfield. Even when he remotely zoomed the camera, it was quite unexciting. Just a large marquee that had been set up right in the middle of the main runway.
"That's it," I said.
"You don't actually need a marquee," said Miles. "But Goliath knows full well that not even the supremely sinful will wait to be scoured from the face of the earth by a flash of energy without at least a choice of drink and a sports channel to watch."
Friday understood first.
"Are you telling me," he said, that Goliath aims to divert the smite by having a few immoral people collected together.
It's precisely what they intend, said Miles. When he has decided to undertake a smiting, it is only ever for one reason, to rid the earth of sin and cleanse the land so the meek and righteous can walk free and unfettered by the dark shadows of the wayward. In technical terms, what this means is that the pillar of all-consuming fire can be swayed from its course by a point source of concentrated sinfulness. A television tube works on the same principle, but instead of having a beam of photons shifted by an electromagnet, you have a pillar of fire moved ever so slightly by an unrepentant axe murderer.
A single axe murderer is going to shift an entire pillar of fire.
No, you'll need more sinners than that. And we're not talking simply immoral people, or even questionable thought crimes such as blasphemy, apostasy, or ox-coveting. No, we're talking about the big ones, murder, thievery, and sadistic violence, and only those who are evil beyond measure, the sort of people who are so twisted and degenerate they can never find redemption for their crimes.
Miles spread a map of the local area out on the hood of his car. He had already drawn several circles and lines upon it, plus some simple geometry. He pointed at his calculations. Since smitings originate at 100,000 feet, they need to deviate the ground burst by a little over 4 miles, or 13.2 degrees of arc. That will probably require 18 mass murderers, 6 stranglers, 5 poisoners, 16 con men, and 8 career bank robbers. I stared at the screen again. Does England even have that many?
I think we're short on poisoners, replied Miles. But France has a few they'll let Smote Solutions use, and I think the butcher of Naples is being imported from Italy to make up the shortfall of axe murderers. Since Goliath runs the prison service, there shouldn't be a problem getting them all together.
Do they know they're going to be vaporized in a sudden flash of God's wrath? Asked Friday.
I'd not think they'd take to it that kindly, replied Miles. No, my guess is they're being brought here on the pretext of outdoor rehabilitation, or fresh air therapy, or some nonsense like that.
But that's murder, said Friday. They're in custody doing time. They can't just be used as smite bait.
I know, said Miles, starting to pack his stuff up. It's wholly immoral, despite their crimes, which really leaves us with only three options. One, Tuesday figures out the unentanglement constant between now and midday Friday, and the anti-smite shield functions as normal. The city council saves £100 million, and the searing heat of his unbridled frustration at his creation's inability to stop its morally questionable behaviour is transferred into a useful 22.6 megawatts of electricity.
And option two?
We let Smote Solutions do their thing, and 53 irredeemable felons are vaporised for cash.
Friday and I exchanged glances.
No one likes axe murderers, not even their mothers.
If they survived. But, as Friday had pointed out, the sinful were in custody. It would be like killing POWs. Murder.
The third option is that we nobble Smote Solutions' plan and allow much of downtown Swindon to be laid to waste.
It would be a shame to lose the cathedral, I said. But it's less than 15 years old, and we could always build another. With almost 6 billion followers of varying enthusiasm, the GSD has certainly got some cash, and Goliath can certainly afford to rebuild the Greed Tower.
That's what we thought, said Miles, as he folded up the map. And to be honest, we never liked the cathedral much anyway. Too gloomy, and no provision for a canteen or Wi-Fi.
How do you nobble Smote Solutions? Asked Friday, as Miles placed the TV screen, remote control and maps in the trunk of his car.
Simple, he said. With a strategically placed righteous man.
A righteous man?
Or woman, it doesn't matter which. Find one of those, place him or her near the sinful, and bingo, the Lord cannot smite the righteous on a matter of principle. So Goliath can kiss our arse, and the downtown gets a serious smiting instead.
He looked at us both in turn.
You don't know of any, do you? Righteous people, I mean. We've got a few penciled in, but it never hurts to have a few more in reserve.
I know some self-righteous ones, I said.
That's not really the same thing at all.
What about you or Joffy? I suggested. I don't know anyone more selfless than you two.
You're very gracious, said Miles, but I killed 2 people when I was SO14, and although Joffy is good and just and wise,
I think he actually enjoys the possibility of having a round table with God to discuss the ultimate question of existence.
The sin of pride?
Right. And he'll hide chocolate in the back of the fridge so only he can find it, something that a truly righteous man would never do. Besides, the righteous man has to be good in all known dimensions, since the Almighty is pan-dimensional. If our righteous man put a cat in a wheelie bin in dimension FX-39, then his great omniscience would see it and know. And the problem with Joffy and me is that there are at least 78 dimensions where our relationship is seen in the eyes of some to be a heinous sin almost as bad as murder.
You kidding? Why?
Not a clue. But there are some seriously weird dimensions out there. Did you hear that Henshaw, F76+, had two heads?
Argued with himself, I heard.
Me too.
Where do you usually find righteous men? Asked Friday.
There are a few professionals about, but Smote Solutions is smart. They've booked them for other jobs at the same time as the smiting. Helping a lady across the road, being with someone in a difficult moment, reminding someone of the path, that sort of thing. Trivial, one might think, and easily cancelled for this job. Trouble is, righteous men would never back out on an agreed appearance, and you can't offer them more money, because they won't take it.
And if they did, they wouldn't be righteous.
Exactly.
I should have known there would be one or two snags.
So, as you can see, we should have a few subs in case of mishaps, just in case. But they're tricky to find, as they don't draw attention to themselves, and would never volunteer themselves as righteous, because they would never see themselves as such. Plus, we have the usual problem of being swamped with volunteers, eager to promote themselves as righteous.
All of whom can be instantly rejected for that very same reason.
Right. Luckily for us, we've got a seriously righteous man lined up. He's a real pip. Not even a shred of malice, ego, or selfishness. Even a whiff of him will be enough to divert the stream of destruction away from the sinful.
Don't let Goliath find out, I said.
Don't worry, he said with a smile. We've got him in a safe house, where he is being looked after by semi-righteous people, who are in turn being protected by people who are quite happy not to be righteous at all when it comes to protecting the main guy.
He climbed into his car, slammed the door, and wound down the window.
Give my love to Landon and Tuesday, won't you? He said. And although I don't want to add any pressure, if Tuesday could find the value of U sub C before midday on Friday, it would save a whole lot of uncertainty. And we can keep our righteous man in reserve for another time.
She's doing her best, I said, but she is only 16. Most scientists don't start achieving this level of success before they're old, grey, cantankerous, forgetful and smelly.
I know, said Miles. The planet's lucky to have her. Cheerio!
He started the engine, and we waved as he drove off.
So, Mum, said Friday, the time park?
The time park.